Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. My name is Lucas Vlahos. I'm joined this week by Thomas Henderson and Ken Levin. How is everyone doing today?
Good. I'm doing pretty good.
It actually feels like winter outside, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's cold. It is definitely a little cold today.
Yeah, I got to dig Penny's fur coat out of the closet somewhere because it's going to be like 20 degrees tonight.
Jackson is very dismayed at having to wear any sort of clothing.
Penny won't let us put like a t-shirt or anything on her, but she doesn't have a lot of insulation, so going outside she has begrudgingly accepted like the coat harness. So
yeah, she's all right, I get it.
I will allow this. I will tolerate this because it's fucking cold. I think the wind is honestly worse than the temperature. It's really blowing up and down the avenues. But, you know, maybe we'll actually get some snow for once. Probably not, though. Okay, promote, extend, trade. And mercifully to Ken, I came up with something that isn't video game focused this week. So, my girlfriend is currently off in China, but I dragged my parents out to Chinese food at the Sichuan Mountain House in Manhattan. If you like Sichuan food, you should absolutely go. It's awesome. And then in the 10 minutes I took to come up with promote, extend, trade, I thought we'd do types of Chinese food. So if you had to choose between three, you could have Beijing-style Chinese food, which is probably the type Americans are most familiar with. That's like your Peking duck, your dumplings, your mushu pork, things of that nature. Sichuan food, which is obviously a bit spicier and has that like numbing property. Anything with a lot of chili peppers in that vein. I think the most common American iteration of that is like three pepper chicken or something along those lines. And then finally, Hong Kong-style food, which is like your dim sum, your like baked rice bowls. They have really great sausages too. So those are like the three main kinds that come to my head, at least that are most popular here. Who you guys? Which one are you guys taking?
That's tough. I like all of them.
Yeah, they're all very good.
Trying to think what I've had the least because that's what I'm putting last. Mm. Because I like all of them. It's just thinking of amount. Mm. What is yours?
So, yeah, it's tough. if you had asked me like 5-7 years ago, I probably would have immediately said Szechuan food and not thought about it any further than that. But unfortunately, like my chronic stomach problems make Szechuan food a little bit of a challenge sometimes, and I'll leave it at that. Choosing between like Hong Kong style rice bowls and Peking duck is incredibly hard. I'd probably do Hong Kong, then Beijing, then Szechuan, but you know, I'll do any of them anytime.
Yeah, I'd probably put Beijing last because I just don't eat like duck like that as much as other foods. That it's not my favorite. Like I don't mind it, but it's not my favorite thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only reason why I would put that last, because that feels like the staple. Like it feels like the main thing you order in America when you get that type of Chinese food.
Mm-hmm. Ken, where are you at?
I think I agree. Not a huge duck person. Mm-hmm.
You don't like Donald?
And I love spicy.
Daffy?
I love spicy food.
Yeah, big so time spice gonna person. Be, like, yeah, if Thai were an option, if we were doing, like, greater Asian area cuisines, Thai would probably be my extend. But.
I think Japanese would be mine.
Japanese?
Oh, I do food. Like Japanese as well.
I'm more in line with the Thai food, which also could mess me up. But I don't really – I mean – sushi might be my single favorite thing to eat, but there's obviously a lot more to
there's
Japanese
so much other
food
stuff,
than sushi.
Yeah.
And I don't like most, like, I don't dislike it, but most of it's just kind of, eh.
That's fair. Because, like, I really like sushi, and I like some of the other stuff that comes with it, too. Like, I'll get other things at a sushi restaurant, but obviously I'm there for the sushi. Mm-hmm. But so I understand that, but the sushi is such a star.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. Thai food is great. I absolutely love Thai food.
Yes.
Anyway, if you're into Szechuan food, go to the Szechuan Mountain House. There's one in Manhattan. There's one in Queens. Sponsor the podcast, Szechuan Mountain House. So please, I'll eat more Szechuan food. They do not need the sponsorship. They are doing a very robust business. Okay. Let's jump right into our prospects here. We have 5 to go through this week. We alluded to this last week that we actually have a lot more interesting things to talk about this year. And I was like jotting down some notes going through these 5, and I have pretty extensive thoughts on 3 of the 5, which is very strange given that we're talking about numbers 21 through 17. So at the top here, the guys we're going to go through, number 21, right-hand pitcher Yoandir Suarez, number 20, outfielder Stanley Consuegra, number 19, shortstop Callan Houk.
I think it's Houk.
Number 18, outfielder Matt Rudick, and number 17, outfielder Alex Ramirez. So we'll start at 21 with Yoandir Suarez. For those of you who aren't familiar with Suarez's background, he was a $10,000 IFA back in May of, I can't read my own handwriting, that says 2018. Back in May of 2018, did not get a lot of experience, had some time with the GCL Mets, but then COVID, then Tommy John. You know the story. I mean, this is something that's happened to a lot of dudes in the last couple of years, unfortunately. Now he came into the season as a 23-year-old playing for Brooklyn, so a little bit old for the level, was pretty awful in the first half, had an ERA over 6, really turned it on towards the back half of the season, though, 44 innings of 3.43 ERA ball, 63 strikeouts to only 11 walks, also got some time at AA Binghamton, I believe he made 3 starts, did not allow a run across 18 innings, and struck out 19, so a rough start to the season. Who knows if there was some post TJ Russ there, just lack of reps, really turned it on down the stretch. And honestly is someone I feel like I should have ranked higher after, you know, prepping for this. So what are you guys' thoughts on Suarez? Why'd you rank him in this range? Cause I'm pretty sure we all had him in this general area. And, where do you see this going forward?
Yeah. I agree that it would probably be some type of Tommy John rust, or at least something to that effect. Cause that, I feel like that always happens even in the majors with guys who are already up. Like it's a massive surgery even in 2024. But yeah, I just think he has rising potential, and I think this is a good place to put him now. Cause he did struggle. Like it's true. Mm-hmm. He did struggle in the beginning of the year, And then he probably got his legs under him and started getting used to the whole being a professional athlete again and being on the mound every 5 days and all that stuff. And he started to get better as the year went on. And that could be a rising type of guy. And especially as we've talked about last podcast and since Stearns took over, there's more of a path that you could see to these guys getting better because they got better in Milwaukee so many times that there's just a path to growth for him. So I think here now is solid, and then we can move him up as we go.
Ken, any difference of opinion there?
Not really. I think of the guys who might benefit from a Stearns style front office that Tom's mentioned is particularly good at this kind of arm. There's a lot of potential to rise based on that. He might be one of the bigger beneficiaries of the Stearns, front office.
It's interesting, and I think this also gets to the Tommy John effect. I mean, his fastball was very much his best pitch this year, and it's got good shape and sits mid-90s. It's nothing spectacular. But really, that draws the contrast with his secondaries, like the curve and change. He would lose. They don't look great. And that could all very much be, Tommy John rushed. Like, it takes a while to get your breaking stuff back, typically. But it's weird to me that he doesn't throw a slider yet. Like, it feels like everyone has learned a slider at this point, and somehow the Mets have not taught Suarez one.
Yeah. That's bizarre. He will probably be throwing a sweeper in 4 months. So,
I mean, look, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. And that's the thing that I'm more comfortable saying that the Mets are able to do that with a guy now than I did a year ago today. Mm-hmm. And that's really why I'm more confident putting a raw pitcher who had a bit of an injury problem, who was good for only half a season in above 20 in a system that's better than it was pretty much since we've doing this podcast. This is probably the best, maybe early on.
When did we start doing this in the first place? I don't even remember. But yeah, no, you're probably right. I mean, there was an interesting Twitter poll yesterday, or maybe it was today, from Max Greenfield about what people think the easiest thing is for pitchers to, improve on in the minors, or turning that around, what the easiest thing it is for teams to teach pitchers. And the clear winner was breaking balls. It feels like, everyone has kind of figured out, and by everyone, I mean, everyone except the Rockies and Royals has figured out how to, this is how you throw a good slider. And everyone has a different slider, but most teams have some version of a good slider they can teach.
Yeah. And so, now that the Mets are more modern in this regard, I don't think that it would be a surprise if guys like this start rising because they are learning breaking pitches, where the Wilpon Mets and even the Cohen Mets before they hired Stearns did that only sometimes and started doing that later. More like when Jagers, I don't know how to pronounce his name. What I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
Jagers?
Yeah, I think so.
But he started coming around. Like, he's also a good – He's good at his job and good at what he's doing. So it's a good combination between Stearns and him.
I think my favorite aspect of Suarez, though, is how unimportant he is to the 2024 Mets, because you transport this dude back 3 years or so, and he's like seventh on the starting pitching depth chart coming into the season. And now he's probably...
I don't even think we
13.
He's probably not even on the list.
Realistically,
I think they would sign people before he's. It has nothing to do with Suarez. It has everything to do with they are more comfortable signing a UDFA, like it's football, not an undrafted guy, a free agent off the street.
Yes. To Field Jared Eichhoff hours.
Yeah, and they probably get a little more out of that guy than. They would a year ago.
Right. But, we're not immediate. It's not two injuries happen and we're starting Jared Eichhoff against the Braves or starting Wander Suarez. In other words, if Suarez touches the majors this year, something has gone horrifically wrong or very right.
Or, like, stupendously correct. Like,
right.
Like the rightest they've ever been on impressing guys.
Oh, we gave him an eighth-grade sweeper.
Put him in the bullpen, but yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's more fun. This is like new Jose Voodoo, except it's not depressing because there's seven guys between him and the rotation. So
that's actually a good call. That's a good one. That's a good call.
Yeah, I mean, Voodoo had a...
For the situation. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, Voodoo had the, like, elite, maybe elite is too strong, but, like, the really good changeup, and
Suarez No, I meant, like, the situation.
Ah, where,
Where we were like, oh, Jose Voodoo might actually have to take some starts, and now it's like, you could actually let guys figure it out in the minors when they need to figure it out in the minors.
The irony being that I'm now kind of interested to see Jose Voodoo take some starts.
I know, me too.
Me too. I want to see what happens there. Okay, so that's Wander Suarez. I mean, this is very much just a wait and see. Let's see if he holds those second half gains. Let's see if they give him a functional breaking ball and go from there. Number 20, Stanley Consuegra, and I am a little annoyed about this ranking, but that will come up more when we get to number 17. Stanley Consuegra, we've been talking about forever, I think. Spent the whole year at Brooklyn, hit 232, 294, 489. That's a I don't have the WRC plus in front of me. Good job, moron. 23 home runs. That was in 93 games, 358 at bats. Booth, that's a slightly above average line. Brooklyn is not always the greatest place to hit. He was signed out of the Dominican Republic back in 2017 for $500,000. He's been percolating in the low minors for a while. He kept getting hurt initially. He's been healthy the last couple of years. And, you know, just it's not. I feel like the report is very much the same as it's been the last couple times we've talked about him, right? There's some real impact here. There's legitimate power, but the bat to ball is lacking. You know, maybe that doesn't show up totally in the strikeout numbers, but it's what holds him back from, you know, really taking that leap. And I think multiple among us, maybe Steve and I the most, but I'm not 100% sure, have predicted a leap at various points that just hasn't really come. So where are you guys at on Stanley Consuegra at this point?
I think he's interesting, and I think he's flawed, and that's where you. This is where you put interesting, flawed prospects in a average-ish system, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the power's really interesting, and it's there. And he just doesn't hit the ball enough. And hopefully they get him to hit the ball. It's a little Mark Vientosi in that fact, where the power was real, and I just didn't know if he could hit it at the major league level. And Vientos didn't when he came up. Maybe he will make some gains and start doing that. But like Consuegra has to just make more contact, really, because if he does, then the ball's going to go. Like it is what it is. That's in the profile for him. It's just he has to get there. And it's been also a rough road for him. Like he's been like doing everything. I feel like he's been like hurt, and it's been like a lot for him. So hopefully him just being healthy will help too. And healthy for an extended period of time, because the body needs to be healthy, you know?
I feel like both of you guys have seen him in person and I have not.
Yeah,
I've seen him. Is that correct?
I don't know if I've seen him.
You've not? Okay. Why did I think you
had? I'm not sure.
Okay.
I definitely seen him in Brooklyn. Yeah.
I mean, his knees are, I don't know what they are now, but like with the litany of injuries, like this dude's going to have osteoarthritis by like 35 at the latest, because his knees are just so fucked. So, and that really slowed down his development. I don't know that it's actually impacting him now, but I really, if I had done better prep, I'm willing to guarantee I can go pull up the, no, it's just going to give me this year's one because Google is bad now. But I'm wondering if we pull up Stanley. So Consuegra ranked 13th for us last year. Blah, 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 blah. Hey, look, comments about needing to make more contact. Yeah, good damage. Needs bad or bad. Yeah, it's this, literally the same questions here. So let me put it this. Let me ask this question to both of you. Do you think he gets there, or we just kind of fool's hope at this point? Do we think he makes the necessary bat to ball gains?
What is your definition of gets there? Because
fair,
gets there could be, does he log major league innings? Probably. is he like a good major league player? I don't know. So
okay. Let me rephrase the question slightly, right? Kinsugger is 23. He's spent now nearly 600 plate appearances in Brooklyn and has like a very slightly better than league average line on aggregate. Almost certainly needs to go to Double A next year. Is his bat to ball, is he going to be a disaster at Double A, or is he going to make enough, is his bat to ball going to progress enough that he can hold his own at Double A and, you know, keep this conversation going?
I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps the conversation going, also because he'll go into a better hitting situation that isn't what used to be Keith Span Park, and he's just able to, like, actually do more damage with the ball that he hits. Like, that also probably hasn't been helping him, being in Brooklyn for so long, and he's not really the hitter that will thrive in a situation. It's just a bad place to hit. So maybe going to Double A will help that, and then it starts, he gets a little more results out of his damage, and it looks a little different. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's that also. But, like, I think he'll end up, we'll probably see him play in the major leagues. I don't know to what level, but he just will be around, and you need outfielders all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ken?
I don't know. There's things to like. Ultimately, I'm skeptical that he makes the bat to ball gains, and feels very Wilmer Becerra-ish to me.
Ah, there, the non-elite prospect. at least his shoulder isn't pulled pork yet, unlike, you know, Becerra's.
Yeah. That happened like right away, if I remember correctly, too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, he got traded, and then he got hit in the face, and then he was out for a while, and then...
Yep, it was the hit in the face that happened right away. You guys want to know how old Wilmer Becerra is?
31.
You're a little high, 29. How many played, and since we're comping Stanley Kutzberger to Wilmer Becerra and asking a question about Double A, how many Double A played appearances did Wilmer Becerra have?
I know it's not many. That I know. 100.
Hmm? It is 0.
Wow.
Never made it to Double A.
Double A at least.
Never made it to Double A. Three separate seasons in High A and never made it. So hopefully we can expect a little bit more than of Kinsugra. We'll see. I don't know. I worry he's going to go up a level and it just have like a...
And just 70. It doesn't work?
Yeah, it's just not going to work.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Okay, now we're on to the trio of guys where I have many, many, many opinions. We're also on to what I think is probably going to be the most controversial rating or ranking on this list, and that's Colin Houck at 19. Colin Houck was obviously the Mets' first-round pick, quote-unquote first-round pick. They floated him into the, you know, I think it was technically in the comp round. But after
it was like 20 pick, something, I think
30, because they dropped 10 spots for spending too much money.
Yes.
Houck is a two sport athlete from Georgia. You know, big physical kid, 6'2", 190, looks good in the uniform, has a very good looking swing, posted stupid stats as a high schooler. I mean, if you were, if people recall back when we, you know, tracked prospects for the draft, and I would be reading Brady House's stats every week down in Georgia, and it was just fucking hysterical. I mean, that's pretty much true of all the high school prospects. He hit 412, 531, 912 as a junior. 487, 589, 857 as a senior. So just to give you the you know, gist of what he's doing. They got him slightly above slot at number 32 overall. He got a very brief cameo professionally and looked horrible. If you look at the surface level stats, it was 241, 389, 310, which is a 100 weighted runs created plus. He walked almost as much as he struck out. This is only over 36 plate appearances. That's basically meaningless. He did not hit a ball over 100 miles an hour in the complex. Looked generally overmatched. That's not great.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to wind up being like the lowest guy on him, and we all have him. We all like buried him down the list. So I have a longer gist here, but I want to let you guys go first. For why are you as low on Houck here?
I'm mostly curious to see what everyone's thought process was on putting him down here, because at least for me, when you factor in how the Mets transformed their system at the deadline, they added basically a top 10 to their system. Like, obviously, like, there's a few holdovers, but for the most part, all of the top, it's a huge group of prospects that they just shoved into the top 10 of their group for now, mm-hmm. right? So Houck would have been a top 10 prospect had they not done any of that. But I just kind of shoved him down. He just isn't in their level yet of like the Drew Gilberts and all those guys, like the very best of the system. Mm-hmm. He's just not there for me because of the red flags at the complex, not hitting the ball over 100 miles per hour. He barely played, so it's hard to even judge how much that even matters. And when guys like Drew Gilbert have seasons under their belts of being really good. And Acuna, even though me and Lucas are a little down on him, he's still a top 100 prospect, and I don't think either of us would say he's not. Like, Houck's just not there. Could he get there? Absolutely. And I would not be surprised if he does, because we barely seen him. It's been 36 plate appearances. But for me, it's just when you factor in how the deadline went, it was so strong and transformed the system so much that I couldn't find a place for him much higher.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Ken?
The not hitting over a ball over 100 miles an hour is a big concern. The immediate post-draft reports were not the best. There's a reason he fell to this general level. I'm not particularly bullish on Houck.
Yeah. I think there's a reason teams draft athletic-looking prep shortstops, because you need the athleticism that's how you unlock your highest upside players typically. So it makes sense why teams target these guys. I also feel like this is a profile that a very out of date team would emphasize, in that the data was not particularly strong as an amateur, but he looked the part. Like, this is very much an eye test scout. The other aspect of prep shortstops, I feel, is that there's very bifurcated outcomes, and we get a lot of insight on which way it's going fairly quickly. Maybe this judgment is too much of a snap judgment, but I feel like you typically can see pretty quickly, oh, this guy's got this guy has the potential to actually track like a top 100 guy in a year or two. Or, we just whiffed and drafted the guy who looked good in the uniform, and he's never going to, like, this is either going to take a lot longer or it's just not going to work at all. And to your point, Ken, those initial draft reports really point to that latter option. So that was, I didn't love this pick in the first place. The bad reports after the fact really make me like it less. And I'd take basically everyone that we do actually have ranked above him. Like, I think this is correct. Now, it's worth noting that we are by far the lowest people here. Like, BA and BP are both significantly higher. We may be reacting too harshly to what is a pretty small post-draft sample, but I feel like people generally hold on to pre-draft rankings for too long, you know?
And yeah, and I'm just, when I was making the list, I put Haukin around this area, and then I kind of like did some editing and stuff and moved around. But like, I never thought about moving him up to the other, at the upper parts of the list. Like, I feel like the mid to late teens is kind of where he is for me right now. There's upside for more with him because, again, it was barely anything, and we don't even know what we don't know if he was just exhausted at by the time he got to the Mets system and he didn't know how to like handle himself physically. Like, we don't know. Like, it's hard. The dude had to move and it was away from his family, and he went from high school to being in a professional organization. It's a lot of mental stuff too. Mm-hmm. So it's entirely possible that he just is better this year, and it's because he's more comfortable, and that's also a possibility. So I'm open to it, but I just didn't. I'd rather rank someone conservatively and move them up and be like, oh, I missed because I was too low, than be too high on someone.
That's a fair idea. Yeah. The commentariat was not very happy with us for this.
Yeah, they did not like us for the half one.
I feel like we always have a couple takes that the commentariat is less than pleased with us about. One other thing we should comment on here, and I think you brought this point up, Thomas, like floating guys is a very legitimate strategy, and good teams do it. Like, the Mets are not like the only team that tries to, you know, get guys to float down the board. That said, a lot of the times when every other team is passing on a guy, there are reasons for it, yeah, beyond just money, right? Like, at some point, if a guy is good enough, a team will just take him and pay him the money.
And yeah, no one's floating Jackson Holliday because taking him at one over. Like, that's obviously an extreme example, but still, like, there has to be some level of, well, the guy's not going to get drafted before us anyway. Or at least if they are, it's like within 10 or so picks. It's not like he was a top five talent that they floated down to 30, whatever. He was probably like a top 20 talent, which is still better than what they could have. Well, maybe not better than what they could have done, but it's still a very viable strategy. But it's you got to look at it differently, in my opinion.
Were there guys, and I think I can guess your, I might be able to guess your answers here, but were there guys you would have preferred that were available at that spot in at the time, do you think?
I got to look at the order because I don't fully remember who went right after.
Let me pull up the draft tracker and read out the next couple names here. Again, excellent radio. I do very good preparation for this. Really high quality stuff. All right.
Oh, I know who I wanted.
Wait, what the heck? Is this done? Oh, I see how it went. All right, so immediately after you have Kendall. Oh. Wow, okay. The MLB draft tracker is stupid. It still lists the Mets and Dodgers picks even the first round out of order. That's cool. Very, very good. So next was Josh Knoth, Charlie Soto, Thomas White, then Kendall George, Kevin McGonigal, Ty Floyd, Miles Naylor, Yohandy Morales, I'll do a couple more, Ryan Lasco, Mitch Jebb, Sammy Stafura, Blake Walters, and Max Anderson. Two more just so I can get to Gino Grover, Kemp Alterman and Gino Grover. So anyone among that group that you think you would have obviously preferred at the time?
I wanted Ty Floyd real bad at the time. I remember I got convinced into him during the draft process towards the end of it, but I liked him and I would have drafted him, I think.
Ken, I recall you were a big Yohandy Morales fan, right?
I do like Yohandy Morales, yes.
Mm-hmm. The Nationals are probably not going to make you look very good on that front, no. Unfortunately. not an organization to maximize him. I was also a Ty Floyd fan. I also liked Gino Grover a lot. Could have taken Mitch Jebb. Could have just made a lot of Jebb jokes.
Ty Floyd went to the Reds too.
Yeah, that's I mean, the Reds getting Louder and Floyd is such a perfect fit for their org. I really like Floyd a lot. What else? I had something else I was going to add, and I forgot. Oh, the actual correct answer was probably Kevin McGonagall, who I really didn't like. So I was wrong there. I don't know how what you guys felt about him.
I was lukewarm on him. I was like, I wouldn't mind it, but I would have rathered Floyd. Or even Noth, I was interested in. Sammy Stafora, I talked about pre-draft. But I talked about him as like a second-round guy, so he got more helium than I expected going into it. But yeah, like I didn't mind McGonagall, but I was kind of like, okay. Like I would have been like, all right, that's fine. And he actually is pretty good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he worked out, and I think Steve actually was a little bit on McGonagall.
Yes, I think he liked correctly. Him. Yeah.
So look, you angry commenters, you might be right. We might be idiots. We'll see you in a year. We'll see in a year which one of those paths Hauk is actually on.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious to watch him this year for that reason.
I mean, I think we're going to know. It's interesting, right? Like maybe 5-6 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to say this because we would have had to wait for half a season to get actual reports and have an actual body of stats. I think we're going to know pretty quickly. There's going to be like exit field numbers that leak out on Twitter or through people we talk to, whatever. And we'll have a pretty good idea of where Hauk is at early on in the season. Which I'm sure will lead to more spicy conversations and angry commenters, which is fine. Okay. Next up at number 18, my personal favorite, Matt Rudick. Matt Rudick, a 13-round pick out of University of San Diego State back in 2021. This year, in 61 games, he hit 271, 414, 450. He went 12-13 on stolen bases, had 9 home runs, and only had a 300 BABIP, so none of this looked particularly unsustainable. More than tripled his career home run count in a single season, if I recall correctly. Walked more than he struck out. This is all as a 24-year-old in Binghamton. Now, also, like, so the performance on the field was really, really impressive. It followed a clear swing change and also what looks like some, you know, additional muscle. He closed off his stance. He started impacting the ball more. The raw power is still not great, but it went from you are like Luis Guillorme without the defensive utility to, okay, you're like an actual pesky hitter in the outfield. Almost like, I want to say like Nori Aoki almost. Just not a bad, like, roll-ish comp. Guy who like made a lot of contact, walked a bit, and didn't hit for a lot of power while being primarily a corner outfield defender. Look, anyone who's listened to me babble on for years at this point is going to know that I love this guy. He walks more than he strikes out. He is short. He is unheralded. everything I like here. And if not for a certain factor, I probably would have shoved him in my top 10 and lived with the ridicule. Unfortunately, he did miss basically the entirety of the second half with an unspecified injury. And concerningly, it was an injury he tried twice to unsuccessfully rehab from, and we never really got any clarity on what it was. So he initially got hurt. He tried to rehab once, shut it down, tried to rehab again, came back to Binghamton for 3 games, was awful, and shut it down again. Who knows what that is? That's going to be a key factor. If he's healthy and the 2023 games are real, he's very much in the conversation to get major league time, given the lack of outfield depth in the system.
100%.
If this is like a drastic shoulder injury to a guy who already lacks game power, it might be kaput. So who knows? But I really love Matt Rudick. Definitely my like cheese ball of the system and someone I'm excited to see progress further in 2024. That's my spiel.
He just has so many red flags for me. Like the eye is really good. I'm not even going to lie. Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like he has a great eye at the plate. He always has too. It's not even like this is a new thing for him. Like he's run OBPs that are well above what he probably should for years because he has a good eye. I worry how much contact he actually is able to make at like I think the power gains are there because he hit home runs. Like, it's not like he played in AAA where the ball was on the moon. Like, he hit home runs in AA, you know? Like, he was actually those are real home runs. I'm worried that he's just going to be like a guy who cannot hit, like actually make contact enough where the walks just don't matter because you could just pound the zone against him. Obviously, that's easier said than done because pitchers sometimes don't know where the ball is going. But I think he's like a stealing fourth, fifth outfielder up and down guy. That's not a bad thing for hit for this outcome. If you told me that like 3 years ago, I would have called you crazy. I would have been like, he's organizational depth. So he's really rose himself up. I don't know what level of prospect that is. At his age, already being 25, he's going to be, or he's already 26 maybe. No, he turns 26 in July. Yep. So he'll be 26 midseason. That's not common for guys to be that old. I mean, obviously it's getting more common, but you know, it's kind of, if he was better, he would be up already. It's just, there's red flags in the profile, even though with the eye is very interesting, and I don't know how good of a defender he actually is for his bench flex to be that important, but I could absolutely see him in Queens this year. So like, if he makes contact in AAA, cause that's, I'm sure, where he'll be next year, then he's going to be a guy who gets called up when like Marte hurts his groin again, or
which one?
Someone, yeah, or but either one or both, either, or who knows? Harrison Bader is hurt all the time, and mm-hmm. So there's going to be opportunity for a guy like Rudick to make his case in Queens, I think. And I'm rooting for him. I just don't know what type of level of prospect I would consider him.
Ken, are you about to shit on my hopes and dreams here too?
OBP is a difficult thing to hang your hat on in the minors. It's not particularly sticky from what I remember, given the variant levels of pitching. You know, I also like Matt Rudick a fair amount. Not sure if I would bet on, you know, him making enough contact for pitchers not to just beat him in the zone.
Yeah, I mean,
that's really the thing that scares me with him.
I think that's totally fair. And this was one of the dudes I actually did part of the write-up for. And you know, I went into it saying, thinking that that was going to be the big problem. And it certainly might be. At the same time, I feel like I saw him, you know, fight off a number of tough pitches. To the extent where I'm more confident in it now than I was at the start of watching a bunch of Matt Rudick video. You're all totally right, though, right? Like, there are a lot of less competitive pitches in the minors. There's a lot of, you know, breaking balls that just aren't even a little bit close. It's a lot easier to be passive and, you know, flip away some garbage to stay in an at bat than it is once you, you know, get to the majors or even AAA. So it's tough. And this is a guy without high-end athleticism, without high-end defense, without much power. He's really going to have to lean on that OBP skill. But I guess I believe it. We'll see.
Of all the skills, it's not up to him. Like, for lack of, it is and it isn't. Like, sure, sometimes a pitcher will just not, like you'll take a good pitch and you'll be like, wow, that's a great take or whatever. We see it with Nemo all the time, mm-hmm. where he'll take a borderline pitch where he could probably do damage on it, but he knows it's not a strike and he doesn't swing at it and it's a ball, and that puts him in a better count. But like, also, he's disciplined, which is the opposite of like the Ronnie Mauricio issue, where the guy does a lot of damage when he hits the ball. It's just he swings at bad pitches.
If you combine
these two guys,
if you gave Ronnie Mauricio Matt Rudick's approach, he'd be. Would I take him over Jackson Holliday? I think he'd be the best prospect in baseball.
We would be very depressed that he tore his ACL right now. Well, yes. I'm depressed anyway, because I don't want to see him get hurt. But that would be the Mets starting third baseman with a torn ACL right now.
Yeah.
Instead of Brett Beatty, who is the starting third baseman. So, like, yeah, it's just, I don't know if he's going to be able to adequately do the damage he needs to when it's a 2-1 count. Like, it could just, he just might miss it. Mm-hmm. Or he just might grab, like, fly out. And then it's like, well, who cares if he has a good eye, if he's not actually, because to capitalize on the good eye, in my opinion, you also have to, like, hit the ball. Like, Brandon Nimmo is so good is because when you actually challenge him, he might hit a home run. Or he might hit a double. Or he's going to, like, smoke the ball somewhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not just walking and getting out. Like, that's helping the slumps. But when he's hot, he's walking. He's not even walking a ton when he's hot. He's mm-hmm. getting into 2-1 counts and he's hitting a double. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
the guy that I think is actually a better comp is Brendan Donovan on the Cardinals, because he has, like, Nimmo maybe doesn't have it anymore, but Nimmo has had high-end athleticism, high-end sprint speed, you know, better defensive value, and probably a bit more raw pop. Donovan doesn't have any of those things. Now, he's also an infielder, which and a competent second baseman, but, you know, left-hand batter, high OBP, low strikeouts, another unheralded guy. That's the comp I would make. I'm not saying that Rudick is going to show up and be like a 20% better than league average hitter like Donovan has been so far, but that's basically the outcome you're hoping for here. But to your point, though, and we talk about this a lot with changeups, like, minor league changeups are really hard to project to the majors because no one has a good changeup. And any batter sees a good changeup and they don't know what the fuck to do with it. And then you get to the majors and no one cares. I feel like plate approach is the equivalent of a changeup for a batter, in that a lot of guys have really terrible approaches, and suddenly you get to the majors and it just doesn't matter anymore, in the same way as, like, a good minor league changeup doesn't matter. So,
and also, to your credit, like, if this swings in the other direction, like Ahmed Rosario, he destroyed every level of the minors he was at, but he had a terrible approach and we never saw it.
Yep.
We never saw it because he would hit the first pitch he saw for a double. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's great, but when he got to the majors, he was only league average because they're way better. And so that's on the flip side of that for Rudick. It's when he is in the, like I said, when he is in the 2-0 count, 2-1 count, can he do the damage? And also, like, how sticky is the walks going to be? Like, I don't even know that yet. So I'm rooting for him, and I'm curious to see if he does get a call-up, because I don't know what the Mets have to do to get prospect depth in the minor leagues in the outfield that's significant, but they just will never have it, I feel. I guess Drew Gilbert's here now, and you could move Acuna and Jet out there if you really need to, but that they're infielders by trade. So I don't know, man. Just, please get it out, get some outfielders. But yeah, Rudick is up there for the outfield depth chart, which is good for him.
Yeah. I know that I'm probably too high on, like, everything you two have said is totally right here. Okay, last guy for this week's episode, number 17, Alex Ramirez. I feel like Alex Ramirez is the new Ronnie Mauricio, and that I just don't want to talk about him anymore. I'm tired of this. Ramirez was an IFA signing in 2019 out of the Dominican Republic. He's been percolating in the minors for a couple years now. I won't give you the entire history. If you're listening to this, you definitely know who Alex Ramirez is, or at least I hope you do. I will note also that because the Angels, Alex Ramirez has fallen off. Now, the Fangraphs search usually takes you to the Mets one instead, which is nice. Let me just cut to the chase here. Ramirez repeated the level this year in Brooklyn. He hit 221, 310, 317. That's a 78 weighted runs created plus.
And it didn't look good either. Like,
it looked horrible.
It's not just like he played, like, he had a bad outcomes and stuff. Like, you would watch him and it was like, well, I'm a little worried about that now.
I made this point in the write up where, like, if you wanted to believe in Alex Ramirez, you can go pull up one of his good games and you'll see him hit a homer. And the swing looks nice, and he looks good in the uniform. This is very much kind of akin to Colin Houck in a lot of ways, where he's like the physicality is all there, and when he gets a hold of one, it looks right. And then you zoom out, he has no ability to recognize spin. He beats the ball on the ground way too often, and his bat to ball isn't actually all that good.
I'm with you.
Am I wrong, Ken? Like, do you think I'm nuts here? Or?
No, not at all.
And I also think we rated both of these prospects appropriately and put them in the mid-teens, where they're not bad, like, they're not awful prospects or their careers are over or anything like that. But Ramirez got jumped by a bunch of people this year because he was really bad in Brooklyn and it looked real ugly sometimes. And it just looked, the swing looks off kilter when it doesn't go right because there's a lot of moving parts to it. There's a lot of stuff that has to go right for him to actually do hit the home run. And when it does all go right, it's beautiful, but it doesn't always go right all the time. So here we are having this conversation with him at 17 instead of him at 7. 4.
Let me ask this question. And this is a point, and I won't bring Rudick into this discussion because we just talked about why you pointed out all the reasonable warts. I think I made this argument last year that Stanley Kuntzweiger is a better prospect than Alex Ramirez. Why do we have Alex Ramirez ranked ahead of Stanley Kuntzweiger at this point, given the seasons they just had at the same level?
I don't it's definitely a bit of a name recognition thing. It absolutely is. Because it's hard to also the Mets for some reason tagged or offered him a contract, protected him, whatever it is from the Rule 5. So the Mets see something. I don't know what it is, but they see something in him.
Who the fuck is taking Alex Ramirez in Rule 5?
No one. And if they're taking him, you're getting him back. So, like, who even really – it's even if you take him and it's possible – no one's holding him for a calendar year on their bench. That'll literally ruin his career. Like his career is virtually over if someone does that to him because he's not going to play.
Nope. I mean, he obviously there's more physicality here than Kuntzweiger. I won't argue that. The bat to ball is probably better. I don't think the approach is better. I know the walks were up this year, but I don't think the approach is actually good.
He could probably play center field.
That's a fair point. But he doesn't impact the ball at all. Like,
no, he impacts it way less, if anything.
Yeah, like, I do not understand what the selling point on Alex Ramirez is at this juncture. Like, I think I had him in the, like, I think in my early version, I might not even had him in the top 25, which was crazy, but I just don't think he's a real prospect anymore. Like, I don't know.
I think he's top 25 because even though the Mets did a great job fixing their system, they didn't fix it to that degree, I don't think, where there's 25 prospects better than him, but there's definitely 15 or 16, and that's where we have him. So I think it's pretty I think it's pretty fair to where he is as a prospect right now. And also, how old is he? 21?
Yeah, he is 2 years younger than Kuntzweiger, which is a fair point. Now, I would counter with, like, age is less important than actual rep time, and Kuntzweiger missed a lot of rep time, but, you know.
Yeah, we don't know what his actual – we don't know what healthy 23-year-old Stanley Kuntzweiger looks like because he was on the shelf. Mm-hmm. So he could be a bit behind, and that's not really fair to him. But there's still room for growth with Ramirez. They just there's a lot of fixing you got to do with that, and I don't know if they're going to be able to get it all down. And we're going to have this conversation, I think, with Parada later. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot you got to do to him in the batter's box to, like, get him to where you want him to be.
I think the hands are – they're not as, like, visually glaring as Parada's, but I don't think they're any less of a problem than Parada's hands.
It's a different problem, but it's a problem.
Yes. It's like he – quiet it down, let him get to the decision point earlier so that he doesn't have to pull the trigger so soon. The Mets really need to figure out what their hitting instruction is doing at the low levels, frankly. Like, we're back on that topic again.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the low guy on Alex Ramirez forever. I look forward to doing this all again next year and yelling about the same things, or maybe they'll trade him for a reliever at the deadline and I'll be mercifully saved from you know, having to go through
this. He gives me vibes of, like, having a pretty good season and then they immediately trade him.
All right, pulling up the all right, Mets are going to be in the hunt and they will trade Alex Ramirez to the Rockies for Tyler Kinley? Who the fuck? Who the hell are these people in the Rockies bullpen? After, aside from Justin Lawrence, like, Justin Lawrence and Daniel Bard still here for some reason. Jake Bird, Nick Mears, Jalen Beeks. Sorry, I don't know. Who are these people? These are not real. These are AI-generated relievers.
It's a rough time over there in Colorado.
Let's say they're going to trade him and some stuff for Justin Lawrence at the deadline, which would be a very nice deal because Lawrence has a lot of control left and is pretty good, and get him out of Colorado. Okay, so those were the five guys for this week. We'll have another five next week as we continue to march through the top 25. As always, you can listen or subscribe to all of our Home Run Applesauce podcasts through Apple Podcast. Encourage you to rate, review, listen to the other podcasts in the network. They're all great. We're also Patreon based. You can visit Patreon if you want to support us there. You get access to bonus content and things like that. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com, which reminds me, I need to get Steve to give me the password to that email so I can actually see your questions. I'm sorry if you had one this week that I didn't look at. I'll make sure to get it next week. On Twitter, Steve is at Steve Saipa. I am at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSCN. That'll do it for this week. Until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.